What is up, wrestling fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Paul Heyman SmackDown podcast here on the Smarker Moment channel, where we're talking the go-home show to the 2003 Royal Rumble on the SmackDown side. And who is we? Well, I'm your host as always, Callum Wiggins, and joining me, as always, Robert DeFelice.
Solemn times. We have a sad story to talk about.
Yes. Don't do that to me. I don't know what you're doing. You could have some sort of frightful story up right now that I have no idea about. I'm keeping that in. I don't give a fuck. But like that's.
Oh, that's great.
I don't listen. This guy, Rob, he's a reporter for a serious website, which because I was break stuff. Like we just had some like serious news, both in America and in the wrestling world in the past couple of weeks, and I have no idea what he's talking about. And then I realised he's talking about fucking Al Wilson. Now I don't give a.
I'm not talking about fucking Al Wilson. I'm talking about Al Wilson passing away.
Yeah, we talked about fucking Al Wilson last week, Kevin.
Yeah.
Right. I hope you guys enjoyed that, because I certainly did. We are here with episode 30, the go-home show for the Royal Rumble 2003, where we obviously check out all the episodes of SmackDown and the Paul Heyman stewardship. If you liked that little exchange early on, then do drop a like on the video on YouTube, drop a comment below, tell me how I somehow got baited into thinking that something actually serious had happening.
Yeah, I'm kind of proud of that, because I'm like, well, we got to talk about it. It's the biggest thing on the
show.
It was
your voice. It was just your tone of voice that got
me. Oh, yeah, I pulled that off very well.
Yeah. Other things you can do, obviously, if you're listening through the podcast, please drop us a rating or a review. There's a playlist where you can check out all the other episodes where we've had slots. Potentially better intros than that, or even worse intros than this at some point or another. And there's a link in the description to this episode of SmackDown on the WWE Network if you would like to check it out. Obviously, we're talking about the go-home show to the Royal Rumble, so I might as well get this in early as well. The Patreon, if you are at the Darkcast tier or above, which is the $10 tier or above on Patreon, then you'll be able to listen to our Royal Rumble review, which will be coming up later in the week. And yeah, so you can check that out as well. Give that a listen. We'll talk the Royal Rumble. We talk Angle versus Benoit and Triple H Scott Steiner and all the other matches that take place, but have to be at the $10 tier above to listen to that. But any amount that you are able to give through the Patreon is greatly, greatly appreciated. Okay, with that chaos out of the way, let's talk some wrestling news. And it's going to be quite award heavy this edition, because we're going to be talking about the Wrestling Observer Awards for 2003, but it's for 2002. So I guess they're the 2002 awards, really.
Yeah.
So, obviously, Wrestling Observer Awards. People can say what they want about the Wrestling Observer. I think that these awards are very important because like it or not, the Wrestling Observer newsletter has one of the biggest subscriber base in all of wrestling. So these awards basically get an effective of the quote-unquote internet wrestling community at this point in time. So I feel like they're worth discussing. So,
yeah, and at the end of the day, it does mean a lot.
Yeah, it gives us a bit of a snapshot of what people were thinking at this point in time. So let's talk first about Wrestler of the Year. Rob, the Wrestler of the Year is from WWE in 2002. Who do you believe it was?
Kurt Angle.
It is Kurt Angle. Of course it is Kurt Angle.
That's not hard at all.
Kurt Angle received 221 like first place ballots, which was almost 70 ahead of second place. Second place is from featured in many promotions in Japan, including New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Okay.
It's Bob Sapp.
That's just not right.
Bob Sapp was one of the biggest draws in Japan throughout 2002. So even though his wrestling ability is not at the level of Kurt Angle, let's say, his star power was. In fact, you could argue that his star power was bigger in Japan than Kurt Angle's was in the US.
I still don't think that that's right.
Well, I'm looking at it right in front of me.
I'm sorry.
Third through sixth were also Japanese wrestlers. Keiji Muto, who's getting a shot at the GHC World Championship soon. So, actually, that might have already happened by the time this recording goes out. But I was just shocked to see that he's still fighting for like the World Championship in All Japan. Genichiro Tenryu is fourth, Yuji Nagata fifth, Yoshihiro Takayama sixth, Then it was The Rock in seventh.
Rock had a very good year. I have said that a lot. He had a very good year.
He wasn't there for all of it, though.
That's
probably
right.
Hurt him a bit. Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira was eighth. So I assume he's either from the CMLL or AAA. Brock Lesnar, ninth.
He could have been a little higher up.
And 10th was Manami Toyota.
She could have been a little higher
female wrestler in wrestling history.
She could have been a little higher up. I don't know who that Lucha guy was, but I'm sure he could have taken a back seat to Brock Lesnar and Toyota.
We then move on to most outstanding wrestler. It's usually like the one who's like best in the ring. Who do you think won that? He's from WWE. Benoit. No, Chris Benoit was fourth.
Is Kurt Angle again?
It is Kurt Angle again. Kurt Angle won that with 383 first place ballots in this one.
You know, it's crazy. Angle had a good 2002, but it's a very divided 2002. Like, the stuff he does in the first half almost feels like a different guy completely from the latter half.
Well, yeah, the guy in the first half has got hair.
He's got hair, and he's a lot more dorky.
Yeah, but to be fair, in the first half of the year, he does have that great feud with Edge after WrestleMania 18. So I think it's basically from his feud with Edge onwards. Is like, that's the great Kurt Angle that we're talking about here. We also have second place was Eddie Guerrero. Kojima was third. So a guy still working, obviously, as well.
I like Kojima.
Best box office draw was Bob Sapp.
Ridiculous.
Can't deny the fact he was a big draw in Japan.
Yeah, I guess you can't.
Feud of the year. It was Shamrock versus Ortiz from the UFC, because obviously it's a crossover MMA and pro wrestling newsletter. Second place was a WWE feud. It's not Michael's Triple H, by the way.
I would imagine that it wouldn't be. Is Benoit an Angle?
No, it does involve Kurt Angle, though.
It's Edge and Kurt Angle.
It is Edge and Kurt Angle. Yeah, pretty good fan.
I appreciate that.
Tag Team of the Year.
Is it from WWE?
It is from WWE.
It's got to be. Is it just Angle and Benoit?
No, they were third.
Let's go through all of... Is it like... What brand is it?
SmackDown.
SmackDown brand. Okay. It's Edge and Rey Mysterio.
No, they were fifth.
Okay, then it's the Un-Americans.
No.
No? You wouldn't give it to Lance Storm and Christian?
No. Who are the tag team champions, Rob?
He doesn't give it to the Guerreros.
What do you mean he doesn't give it to the Guerreros? The subscribers give it to Los Guerreros.
They shouldn't give it to the Guerreros either. Like, there were better tag teams that year.
No, they were. Look, I think the fact that they put all SmackDown 6 in the top 5, that makes sense.
That's fair.
There was only one other WWE tag team in the top 10, and it was Booker T and Goldust.
So, who was number 2?
I have no idea. It was some team in Japan, I believe. It might have been Kojima and Tenzan.
I just don't feel like they were together long enough to go...
What do we think with Benoit and Angle? They were together as long as
Benoit and Angle. I mean, Benoit and Guerrero were together for a while. You know, like...
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Most improved from WWE. This one... It doesn't really make most sense to me when you think about most improved. It's like, it's a top guy in WWE.
Is it Lesnar?
It is Lesnar, yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. He goes from OVW to fucking slamming the Big Show and Undertaker.
Yeah. The quite interesting names as well. That's like a good list of people beneath him in terms of like just wrestling lore. Edge was on the list as well. Trish Stratus. Low-key. Kenta, AJ Styles, Ron the Truth Killings, and Matt Hardy were all on that list as well.
There are some well-deserved names on this list. R-Truth definitely deserves to be on that list. He had a great 2002. Edge had a great 2002. Matt Hardy does improve himself. That's a good category.
Best on interviews. So basically the best promo.
I know it won't be anybody on the Monday Night Raw side of things.
But he's a WWE guy.
Did we cheat here and give it to Heyman?
Heyman was second.
To the Rock?
Rock was third.
Is it Kurt Angle again?
It is Kurt Angle. Yes, it is Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle is an all-rounder. Kurt Angle, let's put it this way. Everyone who watched the who subscribed to The Observer at this point in time thought Kurt Angle was the greatest thing that ever happened. And they're not too wrong. It was Kurt Angle's first, Heyman second, Rock third, Ric Flair fourth, and Jericho fifth.
Wow, I think it says something that the entire promo category goes to WWE.
Yeah, it was top. Yeah, it was a top five thing. Yeah,
I mean, Ric Flair was cutting top five promos in 2002. I'm sorry.
Maybe not. I think earlier on when he was doing the stuff with Vince and stuff, where he was co-owner of WWE, because basically he was just doing promo work at that point.
Right.
Most charismatic. Not Kurt Angle.
From WWE.
Yeah.
SmackDown.
He jumped between most, but I assume he's mainly SmackDown.
Guerrero.
No. Who would you say is the most charismatic wrestler of all time?
I would say Flair.
No, it's not him either. So who's the second most charismatic wrestler of all time?
So I would personally, but if they jump between, it's Jericho?
No.
For fuck's sake, it's The Rock.
Yes, this is The Rock. Of course, The Rock. Best technical wrestler?
Kurt Angle.
Yes, Benoit was second.
That's fair.
Best flying wrestler?
Rey Mysterio.
Of course it's Rey Mysterio. Okay, here's a good one. Most overrated?
Undertaker.
Second.
Damn it!
You know who it is. Come on, you know who it is.
Of course it's Hunter, but like...
Yeah, it's Hunter, of course it's Hunter.
I mean, like, Undertaker, I'm sorry, I will stake my claim on this. Triple H in this era is not worse than American Badass Taker.
No, but then again, Undertaker doesn't hold the world title longer than Triple H does either, so...
I don't care, he sits around in the parking lot waiting to embarrass people, like...
Other people on that list include The Big Show... Joni Laura, who was in New Japan Pro Wrestling at this point in time. Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, and Kane.
What did Kevin Nash even do that year? Did
he blew out his quad.
Yeah, well, there you go. That just seems a little unfair.
Most underrated, also from WWE.
Benoit?
Raw guy.
It's Benoit?
That's a Raw guy.
Raw guy? Is it Booker?
It is Booker.
Good for him.
Yeah. Other names on this list included Jerry Lynn over in TNA at this point. Chris Daniels.
Fair.
Tajiri.
Yeah.
Jericho.
I thought he'd be higher up.
Lance Storm.
Yes.
Raven.
Yeah.
Doug Williams. I don't know where he was working at this point. Nowhere, I think he was working in Ring of Honor at that time.
Okay, I was like, that's... Doug Williams is good, though.
Yeah, and Matt Hardy.
I agree with that. But yeah. I like that the readers of this publication in particular gave it to Booker T.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also shocked that Rob Van Dam is nowhere near this list.
WWE came fourth in the Promotion of the Year category.
Let me guess. New Japan?
Nope.
All Japan?
Nope.
Ring of Honor?
Yep, Ring of Honor was third. Remember, this is not just a pro wrestling thing.
Oh, for fuck's sake. UFC?
UFC was second, yeah.
And New Japan, of course.
No, I've already told you, New Japan wasn't ahead of WWE. Right,
because they're... is it Noah?
No, it's not Noah. It is a Japanese promotion. But it's not a Japanese wrestling promotion. It's Pride.
It's fucking... Ooh.
Yeah.
I miss Japanese MMA.
Mm. SmackDown then also won Best Weekly Show.
Deserving.
Raw came sixth. OVW.
Is SmackDown... Is TNA on there?
No.
So, who even has a weekly show for Raw to be sixth?
New Japan had a weekly show at this point.
Okay.
OVW was fourth. So OVW had a weekly show.
Wow.
I'm trying to think of who. I can't remember the entire list off the top of my head, but I think the other Japanese shows had like recap shows and things
any,
like that.
I think
CMLL and AAA had shows as well that were going on during the week.
I never liked them. I like their stuff, but I never liked the weekly shows. Honestly, Lucha was always confusing for me to follow as a child. Even as an adult, I'll say sometimes it gets a little too out there for me.
Match of the year from WWE.
It's from WWE?
Yep. SmackDown.
Pay-per-view or SmackDown?
It's pay-per-view.
Okay.
And I'll tell you one thing. The match that you're thinking about on SmackDown is the one that's won it, but he won it for No Mercy instead.
Okay. That's... Yeah, I know this, actually. It is that tag match.
Yeah,
that's...
Angle and Benoit versus Edge and Rey Mysterio. Yeah.
What are the top five?
I don't actually have the entire list in front of me. I know that because there's a lot of obviously New Japan matches and other promotions matches in there as well. I know third place was Triple H versus Shawn Michaels from SummerSlam. And I think that only WWE matches towards the bottom of it after that were Angle and Benoit from Unforgiven. I think that they also have... I'm trying to remember some of the other ones as well, but I think they're the ones that really spring out to me off the top of my head. I don't think we know the rest of the top five.
Huh. Good stuff from WWE.
Oh, yeah, some good stuff on the SmackDown side of things. Best non-wrestler from WWE.
Best non-wrestler? Paul Heyman.
Of course it's Paul Heyman. Eric Bischoff second, Ric Flair third, because he was a non-wrestler at the start of the year at the very least.
Right.
Vince McMahon fourth, and Nydia fifth place.
Good for Nydia.
Mm. Best announcer, not from WWE, but someone that you do know.
It's not from WWE, but somebody I know.
Yep.
The Cornette.
No, he was a fourth. And to be fair, he was WWE because he was OVW at the time.
Yeah, I guess technically. Oh, it's the other dude. It's Tanay.
It is Mike Tanay, yes.
I like Tanay, but we understand that why it's Tanay, yes?
Why do you think? I know he was a big deal in the Observer side of things, but you know
they were buds, and like
it's his subscribers voting for it. It's not just they voting, and he.
I understand that, but like it's the thing you have to.
And
Tanay
was a good announcer.
No, I'm not saying that he's not. I love Tanay, but I think Tanay as the main play-by-play guy didn't work for me. He works best as a third chair color guy. Adding the knowledge and the history. Like, it's like us, I'll even say. Like, you would be the Mike today. You're so knowledgeable. You're all about history. I love the little punches you add. Tony's the main guy, and then I just say some off-the-wall shit. Like, that's the vibe I get.
Jim Ross was second. Taz was third. Jim Cornette fourth. Michael Cole was seventh place.
That's a shame. Where is Michael Cole ranked today?
He's always in the worst one. Yeah,
that's a shame.
If they do still do worst announcer, actually worst announcer for this year from WWE.
Is it Cole?
No, Cole was fourth on this list.
Is it Lawler?
It is Jerry the King Lawler.
Yes.
Jerry the King Lawler followed by Lita, Mark Lloyd, Michael Cole, and Jonathan Coachman.
Al Snow's not on this list?
No.
He hasn't started it yet. He sucks. I'm sorry.
Best major show. From WWE.
SmackDown.
No, Major Stowe was in like pay-per-view or special event.
SummerSlam.
SummerSlam 2002, of course it was. The only other two WWE shows on that list was WrestleMania 18 in 8th place and Royal Rumble in 10th place.
I would put Survivor Series on that list.
Survivor Series was in the honorable mentions, but it was not in the top 10. Worst show. It's not actually one that we reviewed. So...
It's not one that we read, but it is from WWE.
Yes.
Rebellion?
No, Rebellion was on the list, but it wasn't. It was lower down.
Were we covering it? Stuff by is it what was the one that was it one of the ones that we were gonna cover and just didn't?
No, it wasn't one of those.
Okay. I don't know.
It was King of the Ring 2002.
Oh, we just missed the cut. Mm. What was wrong with that show?
I think people were against, didn't like the main event of Undertaker against Triple H. The other stuff on the show, they thought that the, like, some of the build towards the actual main event match between, not main event, but the King of the Ring final between Lesnar and RVD wasn't that great. Because I think the whole thing was actually built around that as well, because I think they had the entire tournament matches on that one as well.
Right.
So, I can't say for certain why they decided to go with that one, but I guess people just didn't like it. I would have gone with Armageddon, personally. Or No Mercy.
Yeah, Armageddon, No Mercy's bad.
Yeah.
And that's sad, because I remember, like, you look back fondly and you go, oh, everything's great. No Mercy was not.
Best wrestling maneuver.
Is it a submission hold?
It is not a submission hold. It is a WWE move. It is a WWE move, though.
Is it the 5-star frog splash?
It's not the 5-star frog splash. I believe that was on the list somewhere, but it was not that one.
Is it the F5?
It is the F5, yes.
Yeah,
that's good. Very deserving. It's one of the greatest finishes of all time. In my mind, anyway.
I like it. No, F5 is very good.
Oh, this is an easy one. Most disgusting promotional tactic.
You say it like there hasn't been multiple.
There's been plenty, but there's one that stands head and shoulders above the rest.
Well, can I lump them together? Is it HLA and Billion Chuck, or is it one of the two?
HLA was second.
Was it Billion Chuck?
No, Billion Chuck wasn't actually on the list.
Was it fucking Allison?
No, but it was close to that.
Well,
let's put it this way. Dormery was fucking a near corpse.
Oh, yes. Katie Vic. It's weird, though. I put a lot of it out of my mind until I hear it again, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, of course.
Wrestling Observer Newsletter readers' his favorite wrestler.
Kurt Angle.
Yeah, it's Kurt Angle. least favorite wrestler.
Triple H.
Yes, it's Triple H.
All right, yeah. All right.
Worst wrestler of 2002 from WWE.
Big Show.
It is Big Show, yes.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Kevin Nash, A-Train, and Hulk Hogan were also on the list.
Big Show, I'm sorry. Well deserved.
Worst tag team from WWE.
Ooh. Is it like a thrown together team or is it like a team?
It is an actual team.
It's 3-Minute Warning.
It is 3-Minute Warning.
Hell yeah.
Jamal and Rosie.
Yes, I understand the smart fan of 2002.
Worst TV show?
Raw.
It is Raw, yes.
You don't even know how good you have it there, folks.
Worst non-wrestling personality?
Vince.
No.
No?
And which Vince are you talking about?
McMahon.
No.
Is it a McMahon?
It is a McMahon.
It's Steph.
It is Stephanie, yes.
Yeah.
It was Stephanie followed by Al Wilson, Vince Russo.
Oh, good.
In TNA at this time. Terry Runnels, and then Eric Bischoff.
What did Terry do to you?
Didn't do anything to me. He just like been talking to the Observer guys. I don't know. I guess they didn't like her as a backstage interviewer.
Yeah. She's harmless.
Worst match of 2002 from WWE. Not on pay-per-view.
Is it the fucking the table? Raw mixed tag?
It wasn't a table match, but it is a mixed tag from Raw. Bradshaw and Trish Stratus versus Chris Nowinski and Jackie Gator.
Somebody goes to a table, yes?
No.
I don't know why I'm thinking about a table, but yeah, I know what match that is. That's awful.
Yeah. Worst feud from WWE?
Just because it's got Katie Vick, I got to say Triple H and Kane.
Yes, it is Triple H versus Kane. Tori Wilson and Dawn Marie were second. Raw versus SmackDown was third.
Ah, oh, that's not fair.
And Austin versus NWO was not fourth, but he was somewhere on the list.
Bro, that's, you know what? Wasn't good.
No.
Really bad.
Worst on interviews.
Worst promo.
Yeah, worst promo from WWE.
Is it somebody who, is that like obvious?
I would say that you wouldn't predict that this
is it Hunter?
It isn't Hunter, no.
Okay, good.
Hunter,
okay.
Triple H was fourth.
Um,
it's someone that has a lot of mic time.
It's one that has a lot of mic time. Is it Steph?
It is Stephanie, yes.
That's, you know what? Stephanie wasn't that bad.
Well, she beat out Al Wilson for second place.
That's a shame.
RVD was third.
That's a shame.
Kane was fifth.
Yeah, I don't like what Kane talks.
Jackie Gaeta was sixth.
What did she do to you?
Jeff Hardy, seventh.
Yeah.
Test, eighth.
Okay.
Joni Laura, ninth.
Okay.
Huh. Big Show, tenth.
That's fair.
Best Booker.
Cornette.
No.
Heyman.
It is Paul Heyman, yes. Let's talk about him. This is why we do it, because he is the best booker of the
year. If it's not one, it's the other, you know? Yeah.
Cornette was up there as well.
Yeah.
Best gimmick. These are the final two. Best gimmick and worst gimmick. So, best gimmick.
Best gimmick.
Is a WWE gimmick.
Huh. Is it like a gimmick, or is it just like...
I call it a gimmick. I mean, it's not like...
It's not like Goldust, though.
No, it's not like Goldust. It's not like Doink the Clown or anything like that, but it is a gimmick.
Is it Paul Heyman's obsession with the WWE Championship?
No, it's not that.
Okay. Is it Ray?
I mean, I wouldn't really class Ray as a gimmick. He's a guy in a mask.
He's mad. It's a gimmick. I don't know.
It's a guy that has a very distinctive character on the SmackDown side of things.
Is it John?
No, John's actually John finishes fourth place in the worst gimmick category.
That's a shame.
That was before John got good. I think John at this point would be like, if they voted later on in 2003, obviously they wouldn't go with that. But it's Matt Hardy, Matt Jude.
Okay, all right, that's pretty interesting actually.
Brock Lesnar was on the list for the next big thing.
Like it.
Orton was on the list for the Get Well Randy Orton thing that he did for a while. And also on the list was Jamie Noble and Nydia.
The great gimmick.
Yeah. Worst gimmick.
Worst gimmick.
Worst gimmick is not from WWE. The one that won was not from WWE. It's from TNA. I'll give you that. And there's a lot to choose from.
Oh,
but there's one in particular that I know, and I think that you know as well.
Is it Sports Entertainment Extreme?
It is not Sports Entertainment Extreme.
It should just be the whole fucking thing.
I think they appeared on the very first episode of TNA, if not the very first weekly pay per view. Then they were in one of the very earliest.
Oh my god! Is it the Flying Elvises?
It's not the Flying Elvises.
They are a tag team.
Mm.
Is it the? So there were these two hillbillies that were afraid of midgets. Is it them?
No, it's not. But I understand who you talk about. One of them was the Trevor Murdoch, actually.
Oh yeah! Hell yeah! Wait a minute. So there were two guys. Is it Lenny? They had more.
No, it's not Lenny and Lodi. I know what you're thinking. Bruce and whoever
it is. Yeah. Is it fucking Disciples of the New Church?
No, it's not them either. Lodi had some really bad tactics. But it's actually, but nothing beats two wrestling penises.
Wait a minute.
It's
what?
The Johnsons. It's the Johnsons.
Oh my god.
Two wrestling penises. That's literally what they were. So Johnson's been worst gimmick. Second place was a WWE one. Do you want to go at that? Knowing that Cena was fourth, and I'll tell you that Triple H was fifth.
Al Wilson.
No.
Well, Goldust isn't stuttering yet. I don't know.
So the Reverend Devon.
Oh, yeah, fuck that.
And Rico was third.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know that was quite a long thing, but I think it's a good snapshot of what 2002 was. I think I just like lifting awards. They're fun.
It's very interesting that like WWE had a lot of the best, had a lot of the worst.
Mm. Oh yeah, that's often the case, really. I'm not so much the best nowadays, but definitely the worst. But that's not the only awards we're going to be talking about, because we also have to talk about the Raw 10th anniversary special.
I'm so excited about this.
So, this show sucked. The absolute worst.
You know what? It's fun when you're a kid.
It was fun when you're a kid, but like, I'll tell you the worst thing about this show is that there are several people that win awards on this show that aren't at the awards. Mainly, it's The Rock, it's Mick Foley, and Steve Austin, who all didn't appear on the show.
That is,
and The Rock appears via satellite, but he's not there. And it kind of gave the impression that these people, who were big stars at the time, didn't care enough to appear at this show.
But you know what we do get? We get something from this show that has stuck to this very day. I know you know what I'm talking about. Trish Stratus was Diva of the Decade. And if there's anything I recall from the show, it's that Trish Stratus is the Diva of the Decade.
So Trish did win Diva of the Decade. And let's put it this way. She probably shouldn't have won it. Because it should have gone to either Sable or China. But they weren't going to give it to Sable. Yeah, Sunny was a good choice as well. The other choice was Lita. I kind of would make an argument for all four of them over Trish at this point. Trish, by the end of her run.
Sean, like super religious Sean now, is hosting Diva of the Decade, though.
Mm.
Trying to be like the heartbreak kid.
I mean, he was the real Diva of the Decade.
He should have won the award.
Yeah. They do the Don't Try This at Home award, which is Angle moonsaulting off the cage, which I don't know whether is, like, I don't know if you could think of any more dangerous Raw moment that happened in that time.
I disagree. I think there's several moments in that Raw TLC. Of the entire 10 years of Raw at that moment, you got stuff like, hey, kids, put your friend in a dumpster and push him over. Like, there's more Don't Try This at Home stuff on there.
Mm. Tell me I didn't just see that, which is just some sort of like, oh my god, just...
May Young get for throw a hand.
No, it's actually Three Faces of Foley for this one.
No. May Young gives birth to a hand.
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
The Gimme the Mic Award, obviously, for Best Talker, goes to The Rock.
Yeah, and he does have some via satellite thing.
Yeah, which includes like mocking Stephanie McMahon, even though she's supposedly a babyface. And also, the crowd was booing him during that thing as well.
Because he's not there! Fuck you! You don't want to be with us, we don't want you.
Yeah. The Sharp and Kiss Me Award for Best Couple went to Triple H and Stephanie, because of course it did. I mean, it kind of... I'm not saying that as in like, oh of course it's because it's Triple H, because what, but literally there was no other choice than Triple H and Stephanie.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do, give it to Bam Bam and Luna? You know, like, what are you going to do?
Goldust and Luna.
Ugh.
Network Difficulties Award for things that they're kind of like the most controversial moments, and that went to Mae Young's hand. No, it went to Mae Young's hand.
That's fair. You know what, though? Pillman's Got a Gun is up there.
Yeah, it definitely is. Superstar of the Decade, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Of course, it went to Stone Cold Steve
Where
Austin.
Where is he, though? I don't know.
He was not invited, according to Vince McMahon.
Yeah, they could get away with that.
Match of the Decade, probably the most controversial one that was given, TLC 2002.
Yeah, that's so, just recency bias.
Yeah, so the one that should have, well, I say should have won, but the one that immediately springs to mind from the decade prior to that is Stone Cold and Triple H versus Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho.
That's a good one.
I think a lot of more purists from the new generation would probably say something like Bret Hart versus 1-2-3 Kid.
That one's up there. That one's definitely like the first thing. Like, oh, that's really good.
Or Michaels versus Mike Jannetty.
That's another really good one. I think that one's Observer Match of the Year.
Mm.
93. Yeah, there's some good Raw matches, but I get it. It's recency bias.
And then there's the Raw moment of the decade, which went to Austin's beer truck.
So good.
It is a good moment. But it beat out the Owen Hart Memorial Show for second place.
Yeah, how do you even award that, you know?
I mean, to be fair, in the company, they were heavily pushing that because they wanted fans. This was a fan-voted thing, the Raw moment of the decade. And they heavily wanted them to put the Owen Hart thing first.
Yeah, but then what do? You have Vince go up there and go, hey.
Well, no, it wasn't really an award thing. They just they had Edge out there who just saying it and just said, this is what you voted as the number one moment of the thing. And they could have shown the Bret Hart, the Owen Hart thing. And but instead it was the Austin beer truck. There were other segments on there. You had, obviously, they did a top 10 countdown, which included things like This Is Your Life.
That's so ridiculously fun.
Bedpan McMahon. Which is to Steve Austin beating up Vince in the hospital.
Very fun as well.
Triple H, not Triple H, DX invades WCW. Shane McMahon buys WCW. You had Austin and Tyson.
That's a good moment. That moment, if anybody else is on the call, I don't know if that moment is as good.
But there's one that probably they would like to scrub now from like more history, which is DX impersonates the Nation.
You know what's funny about that? I just went back to watching Triple H's. They put up with the best of the 25 years of the game, and they left that segment in there.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, okay.
Yeah, it's totally fine nowadays to like watch a segment where at least a few of your wrestlers black up for a black up to mock them.
All of them in blackface, and I'm like, wow.
Okay, so that's I think we'll close it there in terms of like the news thing. We covered a few awards and stuff like that. So I think that was like the big stories at that point in time. No, it's slightly longer than usual, but I think you guys would be interested in some of the awards at that point. It's a nice like I said, nice snapshot of time at that point. Let's talk about what Raw was up to. So this was the special show, the 10th anniversary show of Raw as well. Because so let's see how they spent it. So one of the big segments was it was meant to be a bench press showdown between Triple H and Scott Steiner.
Amazing.
With Scott Steiner apparently set to lift up a weight worth up to 588 pounds. Which obviously was not 588 pounds, but they said it was. But Triple H said that he didn't want to do any of these contests anymore. He just invited Scott Steiner to the ring. They brawled. Scott Steiner stripped into his underwear and threw him out of the ring.
Yeah, he was wearing like a thong.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite from this era of Triple H. He really was trying to be embarrassed and be a heel.
Jericho won a four-way battle royal over RVD, Kane, and Batista, and used this to select the number two spot in the Royal Rumble after Vince McMahon had already gifted the number one spot to Shawn Michaels. The idea was that Jericho, if he won the battle royal, he could choose any single number in the Rumble that he wanted to, and Jericho decided that he's going to do number two instead.
And this is the funny thing, because we talk about this a lot. They act like 95 Shawn was like 25 years ago, and it's legendary thing that, you know, oh my god, it was so long ago because the business had evolved so much at that point. And they're like, yeah, Sean's gonna try to repeat it, and Jericho goes, no, I'm gonna do it, just kidding, I'll be number two. Because they don't talk about this, but number one and number two are essentially the same fucking thing.
Victoria won a hardcore triple threat match over Trish and Jacqueline to retain the women's championship.
Were there ironing boards?
I have no idea. I didn't actually watch the match, so
I assumed that there were.
William Regal defeated Jerry Lawler by DQ when Lawler used the chain to punch Regal out. Not brass knucks, chain, because Regal tried to use the brass knucks. Lawler basically foiled that and used the chain to pin him, but the referee spotted that he used the chain. So. And then the running theme of the show involved Eric Bischoff and Vince McMahon.
Is this where we get the announcement of Stone Cold?
No, that's next week's show. We will talk about that, obviously, on next week's one. But first things first is that Bischoff fires the Dudley boys. But then the Dudleys say that they're going to go to SmackDown. And so instead he rehires them and then suspends them indefinitely.
Fantastic.
Vince then reinstates the Dudley boys later in the night and gives them a title shot at the Royal Rumble. Vince and Bischoff have an exchange in the ring. Vince says that Bischoff is doing a good job as Raw general manager, but he expects him to do a great job instead. So he gives him 30 days to turn things around or he's fired.
All right, and his way of turning around is like, I know. He's gonna, I'll just get back Stone Cold Steve Austin, the greatest star of all time.
Yeah, and then they do a tease of the fact that they have Shane McMahon appear. And they do a tease of the fact that he can make Shane McMahon the new general manager.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, I liked the 2016. Shane's got one, Stephanie's got one. Vince wants to see his kids kill each other for his love and affection. There's an odd realism, I feel like, there.
Oh, I didn't actually say the ratings as well. So the ratings for this edition of Raw was a 3.6, a mirroring last week's show, and a 3.9 for SmackDown. So they both mirrored last week's ratings almost exactly.
Yeah, so. That's fair. You know, I'm sure they didn't really shake any new ground here.
So let's actually now get around to talking to this episode of SmackDown, the January 16th, 2003 edition from the Continental Airlines Arena in East Rutherford, New Jersey. I'd love to hear I know it's Continental Airlines, so it's sponsored, but that sounds like an arena that I've heard of.
Yeah, and I think Continental Airlines Arena is still in play, isn't it?
I believe so,
Or is that, yeah, because that's the one that they run the night after the IZOD or whatever.
Hmm. Okay, so they show a recap of last week's honeymoon footage and the fatal conclusion before showing an in-memoriam graphic for Al Wilson.
That is awful. I'm sorry. That's terrible.
Yeah, so obviously we're going to talk about this a lot.
I remember legitimately thinking he was dead.
Mm.
Like, I mean, I'm only 8 at the time or whatever I am. I'm 9 going on 10. But, like, I remember legitimately thinking he's dead because that's what they do for Owen and guys who die.
Mm. And they were actually just faking someone dead.
Yeah.
To be fair, they would do that several years later with Vince McMahon as well.
Unfortunately.
They went above this.
Well, there you go. That's the classic line, isn't it? I would do it for myself. I can do it for anybody.
Yeah, so again, it does smack as like especially taste, considering the fact that a couple of nights ago, one of their biggest, one of the biggest Raw moments of all time is the Owen Hart memorial show. And now they're showing a graphic of someone who isn't actually dead, but we're saying is dead.
And it's probably more heartbreaking in retrospect by the fact that he actually dies the day before Tori goes into the Hall of Fame.
Mm.
Like, that's a shit ending, but I guess thanks for the memories. They weren't good. Thank you anyway.
So Dawn Marie sits in the chair with some solemn music behind her. She's wearing a black dress. And she says that last week she's the happiest woman in the world, but now hours passed. Why? Is that they still fell in love despite the jealousy and interference of his family members. Dawn said that he loved the publicity.
So,
like the wedding and the honeymoon, tonight will be the public viewing of Al Wilson's wake.
Do you think they had him laying in a coffin, or do you think they had
Yeah, they had him laying in the coffin.
Do you think they had to reshoot?
You really think they would have? They wouldn't think they paid any extra to have a dummy made of him instead?
I think they could have.
They could have, but why would you waste the money if you could just make Al Wilson just look dead?
Well, when you put it that way.
Let's talk about some wrestling. Los Guerreros versus John Cena and B-Squared for the WWE Tag Team Championships.
I've never been more excited to see Chavo Guerrero or Bill Buchanan in my life.
Before the match, there's a backstage promo with Eddie and Chavo saying one of them will win the Royal Rumble. They get into a light-hearted argument over who will throw the other one out on the way to winning, but then just reconcile saying as long as one Guerrero wins, that's fine. They were doing this throughout the night, actually, of doing some backstage inset promos of basically everyone that's going to be appearing in the Royal Rumble.
I like that stuff. It's old school. I like it.
Cena cuts another freestyle rap on the Guerreros, including references to Living La Vida Loca.
Very good.
I Love Lucy.
Uh-huh.
And Concentration Camps.
Woo!
You're about 20 years too early there, John.
One of these things is not like the other. Oh, God. Never mind. Wow. Jesus, John.
So they take care of Cena first early on, like combo backdrop and Hilo. Chavo suplexes Cena towards his corner. He tags in B-Squared. They take over on B-Squared for a while. The Guerreros are still doing the fake tag team spot, like the fake tag, but they just clap in the air and the referee accepts it.
I don't like that spot. I never will. If you're going to make the sound, just do the tag.
Senior attacks Eddie at ringside, including a scoop slam on the floor. B-Squared follows this up with a Falcon Arrow in the ring. Gets two from that. Eddie scrambles back to his corner in a headlock, so Chavo tags in his foot. But then Senior just immediately decks Chavo. See, I think this match was really confusing. Like, it just seemed like four guys who had no idea what was going on. Because, yeah. And you don't expect that from Eddie or Chavo even, because they were so good in the ring. Because, like, Chavo's, like, Eddie's laying down in the corner after the beatdown. And Chavo gets away from, I think it was either Cena or B-Squared. And he's meant to make a hot tag to Eddie. But Eddie's still in the corner. He's not on the apron. He's not by the ring rope. He's just in the corner. Chavo just slaps Eddie's body. And they say that Eddie's tagged in.
They make up their own fucking rules.
Yeah. So the referee allows the tag. Chavo dives onto both Cena and B-Squared on the outside. He's cool. Eddie dives onto all three. He looks like he's got legitimately knocked out. Because he's laying down badly. He looks like he's hurt. So basically, Eddie lays down. He's laying down the corner. Chavo then gets B-Squared into the ring. He knocks him down. He hits a frog splash and pins him, even though he's not the legal man. He goes out to the ring to celebrate with the title. Eddie is still down. He had barely moved. So I'm guessing they fucked something up somewhere and that hurt Eddie.
Yeah, he must have legitimately got hurt.
Yeah, and that just screwed the entire flow of the match from that point onwards. Post-match, Cena gets angry at B-Squared, shoves him in the face. B-Squared pushes Cena over, backs him up in the corner. But then he's attacked by someone in a beige hoodie and sweatpants and a bandana, who then throws B-Squared
it's
into
Red
the
Dog.
Ring post. Yes, it is. It's a Red Dog. We'll find out later on, obviously, when we do an interview segment. But Cena and Red Dog launch B-Squared shoulder first into the ring post. Then Red Dog applies a Fujiwara armbar until the referees come out and separate them. So, not wasting any time here.
It is the legend of Rodney Mack. Did you know that he was just called Red Dog because that's how he introduced himself to Jim Cornette?
Really?
Hey, I'm Red Dog. All right, that's what we're calling you.
It's funny because in OVW, it's funny because when I read something in OVW, he was referred to as Bad Dog in OVW. He's probably both Red Dog and Bad Dog at some point.
He teamed with Benjamin, if I recall correctly.
Right.
And he came out to Who Let the Dogs Out, because fuck you, of course he did.
So they play a video package highlighting Team Angle and the damage they've done to Chris Benoit in recent weeks. Benoit does a sit-down interview talking about the sacrifices his family has made and the injuries he's gone through on the way to the Royal Rumble.
There's a lot there. And I just don't want to touch any of it. Thank you.
No. Benoit calls Angle one of the most competitive and aggressive wrestlers he's ever faced. Benoit says after tonight, Angle won't be 100% walking into the Royal Rumble. Benoit refers to that as toothless aggression before smiling to highlight his gap tooth.
Yeah. I never liked the toothless aggression bit.
Stephanie's back. She's on stage saying the Rumble will see the return of The Undertaker. And she says that Brock Lesnar and Big Show will be in the ring tonight, but not in a singles match, which the crowd boo at. But instead, it will be Big Show and A-Train versus Lesnar and a partner to be named later on.
Yeah, I don't like the bait and switch there. And what are you advertising The Undertaker for? People have been watching the promos.
Yeah, I know. Well, she has to say something, I guess.
Yeah, I guess you can have 2 weeks for that, Stephanie.
Worst on mic, Stephanie and that.
Yeah, there you go.
They show the same Nathan Jones promo from the last week. Taz says that if he's coming to WWE, he better hide his Rolex. Because, you know, he's an actual armed robber.
You know, I'm just glad that we're more sensitive to things. I know sometimes it's said that we're too sensitive, but like some of this shit is just dumb.
Yeah, and I don't want to say like that about the idea of like just because he was a former armed robber means that he can't have been reformed and be a wrestler. That's totally fine. It's just a case of highlighting him as an armed robber.
Anywhere but America, there's a good chance he might be.
Yeah, and they're highlighting him as an armed robber, as a criminal, and that's what they're promoting him off of. So,
right.
We have Rikishi versus Bill DeMar.
Good stuff.
Really?
Yes, Callum. It's about as good as every Bill DeMar match.
Yeah, well, that's, I can't say good stuff about any sort of thing that involves Bill DeMar, which is So Rikishi controls the match early, hitting a hip toss and scoop slam. Demott does his usual, like, he chokes Rikishi, hits a load of forearm smashes, does a load of rest holds. He does absolutely nothing of any real entertainment value. Rikishi goes shoulder first into ring post, kicks out of a roll-up attempt. Rikishi kicks Demott down, but struggles to make a cover because of his shoulder injury. Demott somehow gets knocked down by Rikishi leaning backwards out of a charge in the corner. It's like it's a spot where Rikishi goes into the corner, he just steps backwards, and Demott just runs into the back of him and falls down. Rikishi then goes for a banzai drop. Demott powerbombs him off the turnbuckle and wins.
Decent ending. I wish Rikishi would have been given a world title shot. This series has made me like Rikishi.
No, it hasn't made me like.
Build him up.
Yeah, he sucks.
Build him up's awful.
Why was he ever training people?
Because he's Build him up.
Billy Kidman and Funaki talk backstage about Matt Hardy and Shannon Moore, which means we get to see more wacky Billy Kidman and his impressions and how brainwashed Shannon Moore is, because he's a kooky guy full of personality.
Just let the man wrestle. This is very Chad Gable here. Let the fucking guy wrestle.
Say that. Chad Gable has loads of personality.
Oh, but okay. All right. But he's not fucking Shorty G. I'll give you that. He's got personality.
Yeah.
But you don't make him a comedy guy. Or, fine, this is Dean Malenko. But even Dean Malenko has more personality. But still, Dean Malenko.
Matt Hardy and Shannon Moore arrive. Hardy says they're jealous because he wants to help someone like Moore rather than help them. He calls Moore a troubled young man.
Which is funny.
Yeah. Considering what both Hardy brothers were at this point in time.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys have been legitimately raising him along, haven't you?
Yeah. Hardy says he's the ultimate role model. Funaki asks Shannon Moore why he puts up with this BS. Hardy calls him a hypocrite because he claims to be SmackDown's top announcer, but he can't even speak English.
God, they keep fucking going there, and after a while, it's like, I get it. But you know what else? It's super funny when Nydia takes her clothes off and he goes, I love SmackDown. Like, that's funny. This is all funny. Why do you have to keep going back to the fact of, if the best you got, you can't even speak English? Is that the best you have? That all you can do is say, you're from another country. How dare you be in my country? Come on.
Matt Hardy takes a cheap shot at Funaki, all for brawl, until Funaki forces the heel away. So they gave a little bit of shine to Funaki here.
Well, because he's number one.
Talk about cruiserweights. Tajiri versus Nunzio.
Yay.
So Tajiri does a backstage promo on the Rumble. He's all in Japanese, so you have no idea what he's saying.
He just does more of that.
Yeah, he just does a load of his actions alongside it. Some good grappling to start off with. Then Tajiri hits a Kurikanrana and a spinning heel kick. Tajiri goes for a side slam, but Nunzio reverses this into a Fujiwara armbar. He then targets the shoulder of Tajiri. Nunzio hits something like, you know, John Cena's like leg drop out of the corner that he used to do, where he would basically do a Fame Master off the top. So he does that on Tajiri.
Well, I like that.
Yeah.
He called it the Sicilian slice, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't like Sicilian slices. Have you ever had a Sicilian slice?
No, I don't believe so.
It's a square. I don't like square shaped pizza. Carry on.
No, that's fine. I'm sure it's very important we get that information out there for the record. Tajiri applies his standing surfboard stretch and then a bridging German suplex for two. Handspring elbow. Not handspring Elmo. it was the less successful follow-up to Tickle Me Elmo.
Yeah, far less.
Handspring elbow. Then then appears to be like a hard edit at the camera. And then Tajiri kicks Noble in the face for two. Nunzio hits like a stunner type move, but only attacking Tajiri's shoulder instead. I like the fact that Nunzio is so hyper-focused on the arm.
He did that the last time we saw him.
Yeah, with Crash. Ring,
and I really enjoy that.
Tajiri applies the tarantula. Noble gets in the apron, but Tajiri kicks him down. Then Nydia tries to get his attention, and Tajiri missed her in the face. Which apparently wasn't as dangerous as the mist in a couple of months' time.
Yeah, because it's all in the color. The green mist is okay. The black mist will blind you. Be careful.
Nunzio uses this distraction to hit his springboard Arrivederci, which is the essentially like, I don't know what you would call it, essentially a DDT, but a DDT of the arm, not of the head.
It's like a, yeah, it's a springboard arm breaker, kind of.
Yeah, and then he pins the Jerry off with it. So, fun Cruiserweight clash. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I know Nunzio's new, so you want to give him a few wins. I don't know why you would pin the guy that is going to be in the Royal Rumble match over the guy that isn't going to be in the Royal Rumble match, but it's not
because
anymore there.
Jerry's going to get tossed out.
Oh, yeah. I know. They show highlights of the 10th anniversary special that we talked about earlier. Josh Matthews asks Cena what happened with B-Squared. He cuts another, I think, quite excellent freestyle rap. Introducing Reg Dog. He makes a load of dog references. Says they cut the weak link out of the chain. They leave. Like, I think a Red Dog does like some barking motions. And they leave and Matthews looks like he doesn't know what's just happened.
That's typical Josh Matthews. Still better than Mark Lloyd.
We have our last Undertaker hype package showing his Dead Man Inc. persona. Yep, so that's what we're going to get.
Yeah, that is what we're going to get, because fuck you.
We cut to Dawn Marie at the wake.
Yeah, we do.
Now, first things first. Commentary is showing pity towards her after all that's happened. Like, how many shots they've taken at Al Wilson. Like, the fact that earlier on in our journey, and I just want to remind you about 2 or 3 months ago, when Taz seemed to celebrate the idea of Al Wilson killing himself.
Oh, God. Well, here's the thing. She sucked life out of him. They feel pity for her. Because,
yeah,
you know...
I'm just saying with this, though. Like, it's clearly a comedy angle. It's clearly he's not actually dead. And they're just like, they're doing this as a joke. So why try and act like it's serious?
The World Wrestling Entertainment Company would never mock death, Callum.
Dawn says everything looks beautiful, cries on the funeral director. She asks for a few minutes alone with Al before the family comes in. Dawn lifts up the coffin, shows a motionless, dead Al Wilson in the coffin. Dawn says... Oh, she should have made a joke like that. That would have been so much better than what she does.
I mean, that's what it sounds like they're going for here. Oh, can I have a moment alone with him? He just showed Triple H fucking a corpse. Why can't she?
Yeah. Dawn says that he looks very pale and that he looks better being carried out of the gurney. And then she seems to notice the camera and she starts crying. It's like she didn't realise the camera was there for a little while and then she just notices it and realises she has to put the axe on that she cares about this guy.
That's worse because it seems like she's kind of talking like she cares, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If the camera's not on you and you care, then you're not a heel. You should be laughing at him. You should be like literally going, I fucked the life out of him, ha, stupid old bastard. Like, you should be bearing this, like, really.
Dawn says that she'll carry on the Wilson name for him. and that's basically it, really.
My favorite Wilson was Chloe, by the way. The Tori's little dog was my favorite Wilson. I think far better actor or actress than any of these people.
Stephanie's on the phone with who turns out to be Shane, talking about the potential of Bischoff being fired by Vince in 30 days. You know what I like? Well, I don't like, but I find weird. She always refers to her father as Vince at this point.
That's an old school thing. So it's like, if you look at Greg Gagne, he only calls him Vern, and she only calls Vince. I don't understand that, but like that must be like a sign of respect kind of thing.
I think it was meant to be derisive. I think it's meant to be derisive,
maybe it's just
the idea
of fucking closely.
Well, I think part of it is also that she's trying to get across the fact that Vince in this is more her boss than her father. Maybe that's why she's saying it's like that. She's not trying to say like, because she's not daddy's little princess anymore. She's like, she's essentially his employee. She runs SmackDown for him. So maybe that's what they're trying to get across. Brock arrives as Stephanie wanted to discuss his partner. Brock says he doesn't want to have a partner. And if he goes down alone, he'll take both Big Show and A-Train down with him. Stephanie says that she wants Brock to win the Rumble as he's the best thing to ever happen to SmackDown. Like, favoritism,
much
really.
Much better than when she called Billy and Chuck the greatest tag team all the time.
Yeah. A bit of favoritism, though. Yep, so.
Fair.
And so she wants to make sure that he isn't outnumbered tonight. Brock says that he'll see his partner in the ring and leaves. And then we see some more walking of Big Show and A-Train walking to the ring with Heyman behind them. I love the the angle of it, because it makes the two look even bigger, because Heyman is so small in comparison. He's not obviously a small man, but he's small in comparison to those two.
I just saw this recently. There's a picture of almost with Teddy Long and the Legends, and my God, they all look tiny compared to this massive man.
So we have the tag team match. So Big Show and A-Train come out first, then Brock comes out. And who's his tag team partner? It's none other than the returning Rey Mysterio.
Beautiful.
Gets a big pop.
Still makes... Rey is very small compared to these men, but still beautiful.
Oh, I wanted to note this beforehand. Heyman, I don't know how much fake tan he had on, but it was way too much.
Oh, he's got a problem with that.
Mm. So he notes...
I think even like to this very day, like this man uses a little too much of the fake tan.
Potentially, yeah. He also, I missed out his promo that he cuts earlier on, where he basically says that when Show beats Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble, he'll have the Big Show, A-Train, Charlie Haas, and Shelton Benjamin all in the Royal Rumble. So stacking the deck, essentially.
That's good.
So Mysterio makes his entrance. Lesnar dives into the ring. He takes out Show with a belly-to-belly. A-Train kicks Mysterio away, but then I love this. Brock Lesnar hits him with an F5, and you have to think, the fucking nuts of A-Train to take an F5 after what happened last week.
I know, he's fine. He's a worker, brother. He's not going to sell it.
Yeah. Brock clotheslines Show out of the ring. Mysterio hits 619, splashes A-Train, gets the pin. This went about 40 seconds.
But it was good.
Yeah, it was good. I think it needed to be that 40 seconds.
You need more segments like these.
And also, Big Show's got a back injury, and so.
That's true, too. But for real, though, you do need more segments like this. If you want to pay to see these guys fight, you're going to have to pay to see these guys fight. Mm. You know?
Dormery greets and talks to friends and family of Al until she notices Tori has arrived. They stare each other down in front of Al's coffin. We'll get back to that soon. Because yeah, first they do. We have Matt Hardy versus Funaki. Matt was in the academically gifted class in his elementary school.
I don't buy that for a fucking second. I'm sorry. I don't.
You don't think Matt Hardy seems like a smart guy to me?
Not that. Never mind. Yeah, maybe he was.
Very aggressive start by Funaki with like flurries of punches and kicks until he's caught in a side effect. Hardy at one point turned the standing rear chin lock into a slam, which I thought was pretty unique.
I think he was good at the sleeper slam.
Mm. Hardy drops Funaki across the top rope, then hits a side slam for two. Funaki with a running bulldog and low drop kick. Then he hits an awesome tornado reverse DDT out the corner.
Yep.
Funaki was good. Funaki was a lot better than they gave him credit for.
Of course he was. Japanese wrestlers are very, very, very good.
Drop toe hold sends Hardy face first into the ring ropes. Then there's a plancher to the floor. Moore stops Funaki on the top turnbuckle. Kidman fights him on the apron. But this means the referee misses Funaki covering Matt off the crossbody because he's busy trying to break up the fight on the apron. Hardy pushes Funaki into Shannon Moore. Then he hits the twist of fate and wins. So he uses Moore to do some damage to him. So yeah, it was a pretty good match.
Is this where he gets the idea to start cutting weight?
I don't think so just yet, but obviously he's feuding with Kidman to come up the back of this. So I think in the weeks following, we'll see this more and more. Hardy and Moore celebrate on the stage, Moore saying that they did it. Then Hardy slaps him in the face and tells him that he did it instead.
Great.
They're very consistent with this. I'm enjoying it. Matt Hardy is great. Just end it there. Like, he had his problems. He's had personal demons. I'm not talking about any of that. Matt Hardy, as a worker, as a guy in the ring, as a character, is great.
As a worker, he's better than Jeff.
As a character, he's better than Jeff.
But I think we've just agreed that Matt Hardy is better than Jeff.
I've always said that Matt Hardy's better than Jeff.
It sucks because I agree, but Jeff has that X factor, and then you go, yeah, but it's still Jeff.
Matt is the better. He's better talker. He's the better worker. He's the better character. But women want to fuck Jeff, and that's basically what
people don't get behind Matt. They just don't.
No, not even Matt's girlfriend wants to fuck. No, okay.
No, that's a few years down the line.
It's not that far down the line. It's like a year.
Oh, that's true.
When Edge was injured, so basically coming soon, really.
Yeah.
Tori cries by Al's coffin. She has to pretend that her own father is dead in front of her.
I bet they had a good laugh. I bet they had to reshoot this several times.
Dawn tries to get her attention. Dawn says that this is a performance and that Tori doesn't give a damn about her father or his happiness.
Go ahead.
Dawn says that certain members of her family, and she agrees that Al died of a broken heart, and says that Tori Wilson killed her father. And then she slaps Tori in the face.
And then they fight over the coffin.
Yeah, Tori slaps her back, sending Dawn into the coffin, knocking it over. She throws her down. She screams at how she hates Dawn. She cries again over Al's body. She apologizes for what's happened. Dawn then walks up, smashes a lamp over her back. Tori takes 5 seconds to realize she's been hit over the back with her lamp and falls over.
Adrenaline.
It was the app. That was the adrenaline. Worst sell of anything I've ever seen.
Adrenaline.
Just so bad. But that's the funeral segment to build up towards their match at the Royal Rumble, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
And thank God, ding dong, the Wilson's dead. We don't have to talk about this gimmick anymore.
We have another Nathan Jones promo saying that he's paid his price, but what about you? Basically, just more him in the prison.
Are you bringing in Ted DiBiase?
Let's run down the Royal Rumble card.
Oh, thank God.
Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit for the WWE Championship.
Damn right.
Triple H versus Scott Steiner for the World Heavyweight Championship.
Utter shit.
Brock Lesnar versus The Big Show with the winner qualifying for the Royal Rumble match.
I could really do without this.
The Royal Rumble match itself.
Hell yeah.
The Dudley Boys versus William Regal and Lance Storm for the World Tag Team Championships. And Tori Wilson versus Dawn Marie in the first ever stepmother versus stepdaughter match.
This is a one-match show, ladies and gentlemen. This is
two matches. Royal Rumble.
Two matches because the Rumble. But like, well, what the fuck? What is this?
Now we're into our main event, which is a 3-on-2 handicap match, which is Team Angle versus Chris Benoit and Edge.
Which would literally be the match at the next pay-per-view, except you swap out Edge for Brock.
So Kurt Angle still walks to the ring on one crutch, even though he's meant to be in the match. So when I saw it was a 3-on-2 handicap match, my assumption was, because Angle is still, obviously, he's still coming back from that surgery, and they want him to be at full fitness for the Rumble, I thought, okay, he's just going to stand on the apron. He might come in every now and again for a few little spots. But mostly he's just going to stand on the apron. It's going to be a tag team match, and we'll see how the finish goes. Angle fucking works in this match.
Oh, yeah, you're not going to put Angle in the ring, and I expect Angle to be Angle. He's Angle. Yeah. Like, he's the best in the world.
So Benoit beats the hell out of Charlie Haas to start off with. He keeps inviting Angle to get into the ring with him. Benjamin then distracts Benoit and the referee, allowing Angle to hit him with a low blow. And so Team Angle take control. I like this because even though it's obviously the 3-on-2 handicap match, it favors the heels anyway, but they're using basically what should be done, which is they have an extra man. So you can have one man distracting the referee while the other man helps the other guy when he's losing to take down the babyface. Very, logical is the word I would use.
Yeah, logic is good.
Benoit makes a hot tag to Edge, but as he builds momentum, Benjamin trips him from the outside and Haas hits a belly to belly. I like the fact that both Benjamin and Haas are basically just using a lot of variations of Kurt Angle's moves. I don't know whether they did that much prior to joining Team Angle, but they're doing it now and they're doing it well, so
yeah, they do it very well because they're doing it in homage to their guy.
Angle tags in, shows no problems with his knee pretty much as he beats down Edge. Edge fights back through and hits a face plant, which Angle lands on his back for. I thought that was weird. Like, it's the Edge face plant. We know what the Edge face plant looks like, and Angle sells it, like, lands on his back instead. I just thought that was a weird way of taking that bump. But fair enough. Angle runs away. Benjamin cuts Benoit off because he tags in Benoit. So Angle runs away. Benjamin cuts him off. Angle knocks Edge off the apron. He applies the ankle lock to Benoit. Benoit kicks him away. Benjamin tags in. Edge manages to get a tag in. He hits a diving clothesline to Benjamin. Team Angle then get the long heat segment on the match, which is they use the numbers game, they distract the referee. Haas takes some cheap shots on Edge. They do their leapfrog combination, one of the most underused now tag team maneuvers in modern times.
We still can't figure out why, because everybody can do a leapfrog.
Long heat segment on Edge now until he fights out of Benjamin's headlock, hits an Edge-O-Matic. Huss tags in, though, cuts Edge off, so doing a long job of stalling Edge here. Angle does a huge belly-to-belly throw at one point. More heat. Edge floors Angle with a clothesline. He prevents a tag with two German suplexes, with each time Edge getting up and trying to reach out to Benoit. Like, they get closer and closer each time until Angle decks Benoit off the apron, but then runs into a belly-to-belly by Edge. Benoit gets the hot tag, comes in like house on fire, suplex Team Angle over the place, hits two straight to Huss, pushes him into Benjamin, nails a third. He reverses a fireman's carry by Benjamin into a crossface. He avoids a title belt shot by Angle, locks in the crossface on Angle. There's a spear to Charlie Huss. Benoit keeps the hold on despite the referee saying Angle isn't legal. And the referee calls for the bell, and the crowd pop because they assume that Angle's tapped out to the crossface, when actually what he's done is he's disqualified Benoit for not releasing the hold.
Damn.
So, but I guess if you can hide it that way, it's not too bad. But it's a DQ victory for Team Angle. Post-match, Benoit keeps locking in the crossface. Edge dives onto Team Angle, takes them all out. Referees like stop or get Benoit off the crossface. But Benoit essentially just walks outside the ring. He grabs a crutch, walks back in the ring. The referees just stand there, just waiting to see what happens. And then he hits Angle repeatedly in the knee, in the back, or wherever with the crutch. Team Angle help Angle escape because the referees are doing shit all at this point. And Edge places the WWE Championship over Benoit's shoulder. Benoit lays it in the ring. He challenges Angle to come get it. And that's your closing segment for go-home show for the Royal Rumble.
That's the way you end a show to the Royal Rumble. You tease your WWE Championship match. The only thing I didn't like about this is that it made Edge seem like such a supporting character when he should be ready to break out here. But other than that, this is exactly what I want to see from wrestling shows.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the 3-on-2 tag team match. I thought that was a very good main event. And yeah, it ended giving Benoit like a leg up because he's mostly been beaten down by Team Angle for the entirety of this so far. So yeah, I think this show's half and half, really. There's some good wrestling on it. I really like the main event.
No, there's a fucking funeral segment. Fuck that. No.
Yeah. I mean, I really like the cruiserweight matches, and I liked Mysterio's return, and he gets a big win on his return. But then, obviously, the opening match, I thought, struggled. I think there was some issue with that, which meant that it didn't go as well. You've already given up on B-squared, but I guess that's fine. You have the build-a-mark match, and if every time there's a build-a-mark match, it's always disappointing. And
there's a lot of guys that just don't matter right now.
And yeah, the Tori Dawn Elwes and stuff still happening as well.
And so. Even that, like that, just a lot of this doesn't matter, and that's the reason that I feel like I've soured on this as opposed to last month, where I was just like, "Oh, the SmackDown 6, they're still going, and they're going, and they're going, and it's great." There's a lot that just doesn't click, and it shows because DeMott will be nowhere to be found, nor Rodney, nor Buchanan. Even Dawn kind of just fucks off after this. Like, she disappears completely. That's why I was having a lot of fun last week and talking about, like, let's put her with Vince. Like, do something there. But now, just, there's a lot of it that just doesn't click. However, though, one thing that does click is this WWE Championship match on Sunday, which is why you all need to head over to the Patreon, because Callum is going to talk about his favorite wrestling match of all time.
Yes, it is. The Kurt Angle Chris Benoit match is one of, if not my favorite match of all time from the 2003 Royal Rumble, and I'm going to gush over it because I have already watched the Royal Rumble in advance. I will be talking about how great it is because it is a fucking banger of wrestling.
It holds
match.
Up.
And I will also be talking about two of the worst matches of 2003 as well on that show.
The worst WWE Championship or World Championship match Triple H has ever had.
So we'll definitely be talking about those matches as well. That is, of course, if you are subscribed to the Patreon. So if you're at the Dark Cost tier, which is $10 or above, then you'll have access to that as well as all the other pay-per-view reviews we've done extra, as well as all the other Dark Casts we have on there as well. Outside of that, if you aren't obviously subscribed through the Patreon, then you'll be checking us out next week where we're doing the first show back from the Royal Rumble, which features a return of a big superstar. So we'll be talking about that as well. But you have to stay tuned for the next week until we'll be talking about that. Other ways, obviously, you can support us financially outside of the Patreon is the Redbubble and TeePublic shops, where you can pick up some Smart Cat Moment merchandise. And, of course, you can hit the applause button or join the membership on YouTube as well, get similar rewards as on the Patreon. We have the website as well, where you can check out all the articles on just all the weekly stuff, all the TV reports, all the Fantasy League stuff, anything and everything you can find on the website. Social media, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at SmartCatMoments. Megamaniacs, it's the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/TheMegamaniacs, where you can talk with like-minded wrestling fans who are also fan of the SmartCat Moment franchise, as well as the Fanboys Anonymous side of things as well, which is Tony's geek culture website. So everything that's movie-related, comic books, TV shows, video games, you can talk about that on the Fanboys side of it. We'll be doing some, me and Rob will be joining him for some podcasts, some James Bond related podcasts on there. We probably already started it by the time this goes out. Got in this well in advance, but yeah, we'll be putting out some stuff on there. So definitely check all that stuff out as well. Rob, what have you doing? What have you got coming up?
So what I've got coming up today is you should head over to faithful.com and listen, or not listen because I won't be doing any recording, but check us out covering Impact Wrestling's Hard to Kill pay-per-view. This is the show that features Kenny Omega, Doc Gallows, and Carl Anderson going against the Motor City Machine Guns and Rich Swann. There's a barbed wire massacre match between Eddie Edwards and Sami Callihan. There's a women's tag team tournament match. Go check out Fightful.com, Fightful Select, Fightful Scraps, Fightful Gaming. It's all there, really. If you click on Fightful and just start clicking around, it supports all of us greatly. Again, like Callum said, check out everything we're doing over at Fanboys. And you can follow me on Twitter at Dude Felice.
Absolutely. And you can follow me on Twitter at Wigmeister14. And yeah, thank you very much for tuning in for this episode 30. And we will see you at episode 31. Or hopefully, you'll be checking out the Royal Rumble stuff as well. But for now, this has been another Smart Count Moment. And we are being counted out.